Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 11th, 2020. Section A. County receives mobile morgue from state, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. A mobile morgue arrived in Midland County on Tuesday, a month after officials requested it because of rising COVID-19 deaths, County Judge Terry Johnson confirmed Thursday. The mobile morgue, or refrigerated trailer, was requested during a spike in COVID-19 deaths a few weeks ago, according to Johnson. The city of Midland reported 158 residents have died from the virus, though deaths have slowed down this month compared to November. Midland Memorial Hospital CEO and President Russell Myers said in a phone interview that the hospital began talking with the county a couple of months ago about the possibility of running out of morgue space. There's space for only 4 bodies in the hospital's morgue. That's usually enough, but Myers said overall deaths in the hospital were up 49% from March to November compared to the same time period last year. Despite the year-over-year death rate increase, Myers said the hospital is expecting deaths from coronavirus will trend downward over the next few months as they continue a new outpatient antibody treatment, and a vaccine is expected to be distributed soon. With a vaccine coming, and especially with a treatment that appears to be working for at least a small number of our most vulnerable people, these are good signs that the death rate may have peaked, he said. Of course, we don't know that, but we're very hopeful that we're at or near the peak. Johnson said the refrigerated trailer is in the parking lot of Sanchez Mortician Services and has space for 40 bodies. He said the state is covering the full cost of powering the trailer and that it was requested only as a precaution. We pray in 90 days we're sending it back without ever having put the first body in it, he said. The Midland County Commissioner's Court will consider today amending an existing contract with Sanchez Mortician Services. Johnson said the funeral home is paid a monthly fee by the county to pick up bodies in Midland and send any bodies in need of autopsies to Dallas. The owner has proposed amending their contract to add storage for 50 more bodies in addition to the current capacity for 15. That would raise the county's fee by $4,800 on top of the $25,000 they already pay the funeral home a month. The amended contract would be in place for 3 years. Johnson said he felt the additional space was unnecessary now that the county has received a mobile morgue from the state. The commissioner's court will vote on the contract proposal at 9 a.m. today during a virtual meeting. Midland Health. Myers. Hospital not seeing expected spike in patients after Thanksgiving. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Although Midland Memorial's COVID-19 unit has remained at about 90% capacity, CEO and President Russell Myers said Thursday that staff have not seen a spike in hospitalizations as they expected to 2 weeks after the Thanksgiving holiday. That may be an indication that many residents followed the CDC's guidelines about not gathering for Thanksgiving. However, he cautioned that it will be 2 more weeks until the hospital can say with certainty that they avoided a spike. We're on the right path, Myers said. 4 weeks is fully out of the woods, but it's already looking good. You would have expected that the initial spike would come in the 10 to 14 day period. And we're right at that. Mayor Patrick Payton warned Midlanders to not assume a lack of spike in hospitalizations means the worst is over. He asked that residents continue to take precautions and not become complacent with following guidelines such as mask wearing and social distancing. It'd be a good idea to just assume we're in the woods for a while, he said, especially as December holidays approach. Payton said Midlanders should be vigilant until a vaccine is widely available. Continuing the analogy, he said, we're probably about to enter the wintry woods of Christmas time. Let's right now be very, very cautious about looking for where the exit of the woods is and just keep fighting this fight. There were 89 patients in the hospital's COVID-19 unit Thursday. He said there are 97 total virus patients in the hospital, but the 8 not in the COVID-19 unit are no longer infectious, though they still are recovering from complications. Coronavirus hospitalizations in the Midland Odessa Trauma Service Area are slowly moving down toward 15% of total hospital capacity. Hospitalizations need to fall below that threshold for 7 consecutive days before businesses can reopen to 75% occupancy after rolling back to 50% last month. MMH expecting to receive first round of vaccines Monday, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Pending a formal review by the FDA, Midland Memorial Hospital is expecting to receive the first round of Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine by Monday, President CEO Russell Myers said during a briefing Thursday. Myers said MMH is prepared to immediately begin administering the vaccine to its workforce once it arrives following FDA approval. They will initially be receiving 1,950 doses, which Myers said is enough to cover hospital staff if everyone decides they want the vaccine. "We know there will be people who want to wait," he said. "We will be respectful of that. We are not mandating the vaccine. We will strongly encourage people to take it when it becomes available." There have been concerns raised over reported allergic reactions to the vaccine after a rollout in Great Britain, but Myers said those who had reactions were known to be at risk because they had past reactions to vaccines. He said MMH is asking anyone who has had a previous allergic reaction to a vaccine to not take the Pfizer vaccine. However, Myers said there are clear indications some people will have a reaction to the vaccine similar to side effects associated with the flu shot. Although it is not indicative of an allergy, possible side effects include soreness, fatigue, fever, and chills. It mimics the body's reaction to the disease so that antibodies are created and grow, Myers said. "That is a good thing if you have a small reaction." He said a flu-like reaction is more likely to occur after the second vaccine dose and will subside in 24 hours. Some people may have to miss a day of work afterward if they are not feeling well. It is not yet known when the vaccine will be available to the general public. Myers said they've been reassured by the state that a second round of doses will follow the initial shipment. Whitney Craig said Midland Health Department said Thursday that after hospital staff receive the vaccine, it will go to long-term care workers and residents, outpatient health care workers, school nurses, and public health and emergency workers. After those deemed most critical receive the vaccine, it will hopefully be available to everyone else. The vaccine is going to be a major factor in when we can get back to normal. Isolation, plenty of rest, part of at-home care. A commentary by Val Sparks from Midland Health. So you've got symptoms of COVID and now the test is positive. You need to stay home. Do not go to work or school. Do not go to the grocery store or out to eat. You must stay isolated away from others for a minimum of 10 days. Ask family or friends for assistance. Contact via phone or text anyone you may have had close contact with within the last 48 hours before your first symptoms. They are now exposed. Even if you have mild symptoms and you feel better within 10 days, you are still infectious and you must stay home. In your home, separate from your loved ones. Sleep alone in a separate room. Use a separate bathroom if at all possible. Wash your hands and do not socialize with family or friends. Do not eat at the same time. Clean high-touch areas in your home, often doorknobs, cell phones, remotes, sinks, and faucets. You will feel fatigue. Rest as much as possible. Naps are encouraged. Get a pulse ox from the local Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, or borrow one from a friend. Check your pulse ox if you feel short of breath. Maintain your oxygen level above 92%, no lower than 90 if you're up and about. If your pulse ox is below 90, seek emergency care immediately. Eat nutritious meals. Drink water or juice. Stay hydrated. If you run a high fever or have severe diarrhea, you must drink more water than normal. Take Tylenol for fever or body aches. Take over-the-counter meds for diarrhea, nausea, cold symptoms, or cough. Continue to take your regular medication. This includes inhalers and other asthma medication if you normally take it. You can add zinc and vitamin C. Add a coated baby aspirin, 81 milligrams, if your stomach can tolerate it. This prevents blood clots. Gargle with Listerine Cool Mint mouthwash. It kills the virus. Do this 2 or 3 times a day. If you're short of breath, sleep with your head elevated, maybe in a recliner at 45 degrees. Take deep breaths and force yourself to cough. This prevents pneumonia. Lie on your stomach. This helps move air to unused lung tissue. Contact your primary care physician. If you have any questions or your symptoms worsen, do not go to their office. You may need an antibiotic to prevent a secondary infection. The antibiotic doxycycline has anti-inflammatory properties. If you experience chest pain or signs of a heart attack or stroke, seek emergency care immediately. Please tell any health care provider that you tested positive for COVID. Keep the lab result and the date for quick reference. This prevents further testing. If you have underlying health issues, call your primary care provider as soon as possible for monitoring. You may return to work or school after 10 days from your first symptom if it has been at least 24 hours without fever and you're off fever-reducing meds. Your symptoms are getting better and you don't have any new symptoms. If you feel you are high risk and are interested in the outpatient bamlanivimab antibody treatment, contact your primary care physician immediately after a positive COVID test. Val Sparks is infection preventionist for Midland Health. Library exhibit Sparks Memories of Route 66 for Midland Couple by Kim Patrick, Midland County Public Libraries. Midlanders A.L. and Ellen Mitchell once lived in San Juan, New Mexico. A.L. was one of 4 New Mexico State police officers who patrolled Route 66 in the northeastern part of the state. He covered Route 66 from the Texas line to Tucumcari. Ellen grew up in San Juan, where her family lived for over 100 years. Ellen's uncle was the mayor at one time, and now his granddaughter has taken that honor. A.L. met Ellen in San Juan, and they married and lived there before moving to Texas and settling in Midland while A.L. worked as a Texas Ranger. During a recent visit to view the exhibit America's Road, The Journey of Route 66 at the Midland County Public Library, A.L. reflected on his time as a New Mexico State police officer on Route 66. He enjoyed his position and his favorite part of the job, catching the bad crooks. At one time, the 2-lane highway had many car thieves transporting stolen vehicles anywhere from Chicago to Los Angeles. A.L. said the 4 state police officers would spot a stolen car and then book the criminal in the Albuquerque jail. A.L. said he and his fellow officers captured more stolen cars in 2 years than anywhere else in the United States. The Mitchells remembered seeing many cars like the 1965 Ford Mustang currently on display at the library. A.L. said that for 3 weeks after schools let out for the summer, there wasn't a break in the headlights for a 20-mile stretch. You could see every kind of character in the world. It was the main street of the world. Every kind of character went down that highway, he said. Walking through the exhibit, the Mitchells remembered seeing the Burma Shave signs all along Route 66. Ellen said there are parts of the signs still visible along the highway going into Carlsbad. The exhibit's photo gallery brought back memories and stories as well. The couple observed the impact time had on the cities and towns in the photos, even when the photos were taken only 3 years apart. During their time at the library, the couple shared one of their favorite memories of Route 66. Ellen was working at a store along the highway when a man stopped in for gas. She grew suspicious when he asked to cash a check at the store. She told the man they had just returned from making a deposit at the bank and were unable to cash his check. The man returned 2 months later, wanting to cash another check. Again, Ellen refused and this time called A.L., who was on patrol. A.L. pulled the man over and started questioning him. The man told A.L. that he was good friends with the woman at the store where he stopped to cash the checks. After the man stopped talking, A.L. set him straight. "You know that blonde-headed lady you're good friends with?" he said. "That's my wife. She doesn't know you." The man eventually confessed to attempting to cash hot checks, and AL learned the man was wanted on similar charges in other towns. That was Route 66, said Ellen. America's Road, The Journey of Route 66, is at the Midland Public Library downtown branch through January 4th. COVID totals approach 12,000, 159th death reported from staff reports. The Midland Health Department on Wednesday reported another 174 unconfirmed cases of COVID-19 inside Midland County, bringing the total number of cases during the pandemic to 11,877. The city also reported the 159th death, a man in his 60s who died on Wednesday. The man had underlying conditions, according to the city, and was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. His death was the 14th reported this month. The city of Midland also reported its next round of confirmed cases, 169 cases, on December 2nd. The Midland Health Department is following new CDC guidelines, which recommends contacting patients who more recently tested positive. The Midland Health Department will now contact recent positive patients along with contacting positive patients from November 19th as they continue to work through the influx of positive case numbers. The Health Department reported the number of confirmed cases during the pandemic topped 9,000. It also reported it had confirmed 1,670 active cases and that 5,939 people had recovered. The number of unconfirmed cases through Wednesday was 2,804. This count is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the health department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. The information is being released to the public in an effort to provide citizens more insight into how the virus is affecting our community on a daily basis. MISD to offer rapid testing for staff and students, from staff reports. Midland ISD will begin offering voluntary COVID-19 testing. The first testing event for staff was Thursday. Voluntary student testing is to begin January 11th. The testing is being offered because of new quarantine guidelines recommended by the CDC, according to a press release from MISD. The new guidelines include reducing quarantine from 14 to 7 days if an individual did not show symptoms and tested negative for COVID-19. MISD has been approved to provide the rapid testing. The testing will be free and results will be shared only on a need-to-know basis, according to the release. Participants may be required to follow up with their health care provider, even with a negative test result, depending upon symptoms. The first phases of testing will be Tuesdays and Thursdays beginning December 10th. Employees who are showing symptoms or those who are quarantined with no symptoms may schedule a test 4 to 7 p.m. at central office. The second phase of testing begins Monday. Staff who develop symptoms while at work during the day may request a test from a campus nurse. The CDC defines certain symptoms as having the potential to be a result of COVID-19. In-house testing among our staff will help us improve contact tracing should new cases occur, said Imogene Douglas, Director of Health Services for the district. Students who show symptoms while at school may be tested on a voluntary basis beginning January 11th. In order to be tested, parents must complete a permission slip. Permission slips will be emailed to parents during the first week of the spring semester. The final phase of testing will begin January 18th, as asymptomatic students on quarantine will be eligible for voluntary testing. Obituaries and death notices. Doyce Roy Rowe, DR, 80 of Midland, passed away on December 4th. A memorial service in Midland at the Kentucky Baptist Church on Saturday, December 12th at 11 a.m. Harold Gene Sledge, 90 of Midland, went home to his Heavenly Father on Sunday, December 6th. A funeral service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Monday, December 14th at First Baptist Church in Midland, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that contributions in memory of Gene be made to MARC, Midland, Texas. Jackie Ray Williams, 66, of Midland, passed away Saturday, November 26th. No services will be held. Arrangements were made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. John Philip York, 46, of Midland, passed away Monday, December 7th. No services will be held at this time. Arrangements were made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Santos Manuel Hernandez, 64, of Andrews, passed away on November 30th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Visitation will be held on Friday, December 11th from 10 to 6 p.m. at the American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Rosary immediately following, beginning at 6 p.m. Funeral service will be on Saturday, December 12th at 10 a.m. in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Burial will take place at Andrews County Cemetery.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, December 11th, 2020. Section A. ORMC to continue free COVID tests. MCH ceases free tests and flu shots after funding runs out, by Federico Martinez. Odessa Regional Medical Center will continue to offer free COVID-19 tests and flu shots through December, but Medical Center Health System will immediately discontinue the free service because their funding has run out. Both hospitals announced in a joint news release Thursday. Odessa City Council in November voted to give the hospitals a total of $1 million to provide free testing and flu vaccines. The program was funded from a CARES Fund grant awarded to the city. We are so grateful that the City Council provided the funds and partnered with us and Odessa Regional Medical Center to provide this valuable service to the community, MCHS CEO Russell Tippin said during a Thursday news conference. MCHS Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said the hospital was able to provide a total of 3,620 COVID tests and 215 flu shots, and spent $553,430 on the effort. The hospital will continue to offer COVID-19 tests for a fee at their various clinics and emergency rooms, she said. ORMC will continue offering the free coronavirus tests and flu shots through December or until their supplies run out, ORMC officials said Thursday. ORMC will continue to host free mobile COVID-19 testing events throughout the county. The next event is scheduled for Friday, today, at Ector County Coliseum. For more information, contact ORMC at 432-582-8549. Beginning today, the state is offering free drive-through testing at Floyd Gwynn Park from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. The tests are free to anyone over the age of 5, but those with insurance are asked to bring insurance cards. To pre-register for tests, visit www.docshealthtesting or call 267-362-5207. Barbecue Barn set to close. Restaurant to remain open until December 18th. By Royal McGregor. For the last 11 years, Darren Glisson has owned and operated the Barbecue Barn. The 51-year-old Odessan said he has mulled the decision to close the barbecue chapter of his life for the last 2 years. Glisson announced on his Facebook page November 12th that he had made the decision to close the Barbecue Barn December 18th. Glisson cites coronavirus as a factor in closing, but he said the ability to take time off played the largest role in his decision. It was kind of a complicated decision I had, Glisson said. COVID had some to do with it. It was certainly an influence, but it wasn't a direct cause of it. It was my state of mind because of COVID that was spending my life here doing this when I could be doing things that I want to take on. Glisson said he has received plenty of support from the community throughout the years and explained that many customers were sad when they found out the news about the Barbecue Barn closing. My customers are sad and disappointed, and I feel the exact same way they do, Glisson said. When a person is done, they are done. He purchased the barbecue barn located at 3820 Andrews Highway in 2009. The barbecue barn opened in 1990. Prior to taking over the barbecue barn, Glisson owned and operated Torriados, a Mexican restaurant, 3816 Andrews Highway. He said that Torriados was in business for about 10 years. Glisson shifted his focus from Torriados to the barbecue barn and leased the other building, which currently serves as the home to Curbside Bistro. I enjoyed eating, Glisson said about opening up a restaurant. I enjoy cooking. Glisson said Chef Alejandro Barrientos at Curbside Bistro will lease the barbecue barn. However, he said he doesn't expect it to continue as a barbecue location. Barrientos didn't give any details about the new business, but he said he hopes to open it in January. Glisson said first on his list, after he closes the barbecue barn, is to take some time off and then travel to see parts of the world that he hasn't seen. I want to travel to a few different places and see them before I get too old to do it, he said with a smile. Senator Glad for TEA Grade Pause by Ruth Campbell. State Senator Kel Seliger was thrilled to hear that the Texas Education Agency has announced a pause for A to F accountability ratings for the 2020-21 school year. Seliger, Republican Amarillo, spoke during a virtual town hall from Amarillo Thursday. The STAR test will proceed for the school year to provide information about student learning that teachers and parents can see to help students grow, a TEA news release said. For those schools that incorporate STAR results into teacher evaluations, TEA is providing flexibility to allow them to remove that component this school year, the release said. That is great news, exactly what I asked them to do in July. The tests will go on, and they can still use that information. No superintendent has asked not to do the assessment. There are a lot of things they can learn from the assessment, Seliger said. He noted that you'd have a tough time getting young children to sit in front of a computer screen all day. Distance learning has come a long, long way, I think largely led by our community colleges, Seliger said. It is going to be a big part of education at every level in the future, but it's not up to the job we're asking of it right now. When the legislative session starts January 12th, Seliger said they don't know what it will look like. We held committee hearings this week and we had plexiglass enclosures. Most of us were wearing masks the whole time. We had to have tests before we went in and we did what we were supposed to do. No one went in there without a mask and they were properly distanced. There have been infections and positive tests in the Capitol. He said there are two schools of thought. Some people think no one should be allowed in the Capitol and some people thought everybody should be allowed. It's the people's house, and I think it's important. I think the way people reason through it is let's go 60 days and then reset. If everything is working fine, we want people to come to the Capitol. They only get the opportunity every other year, and we need to know what they think, Seliger said. If anybody needs to see me, they are going to see me by one means or another. We're not going to be doing Permian Basin Day, Big Spring Day, Panhandle Day, Coastal Bend Day, because all those people want to come in. We're going to have to make sure mask and distance in big groups. It's very difficult, and everybody's going to have to sit outside in a tent for a while and determine where it is they're headed in the Capitol, and then get a test and wait 15 minutes for the test. They'd probably be let in the Capitol. Most people won't want to do that. As I tell most people, call and let me know what you need and we will make it work, because there are some things that we need to talk to people about, Seliger said. The legislature has to pass a budget and try to get done what we're getting done this year for $250 billion, he said. The comptroller says we're not going to have that kind of money going into the session. So what do we do? The governor has asked for 5% decreases in state agencies and boards, with the exception of public and higher ed and health care, Medicaid primarily. Medicaid is the way that we match federal dollars to provide health care for people who otherwise would not have it. They would have it, but localities and local counties would have to pay for it, Seliger said. Schools are funded by formulas that are tied to enrollment. I don't think anybody is even thinking about the TEA reducing what we accomplished in House Bill 3 in 2019, which included a pay raise for teachers and things like that. When we look at the other things that we do in the state that are extremely important, transportation, health care, criminal justice, but we just aren't going to have the money to fund them, Seliger added. Apply now for rent and utility assistance from the city by Federico Martinez. Odessa City Council recently voted to earmark $573,750 in CDBG CARES funds to help residents who have been financially impacted by COVID-19 pay rent, mortgages, and utilities. For more information, interested applicants should contact the city's Community Development Department at 432-335-4820. Applications are currently being accepted, according to a city news release. Councilwoman Peggy Dean said the assistance is vital because many residents who lost their jobs due to COVID may soon lose their homes because federal regulations that protected evictions due to COVID are expiring in December. These funds are desperately needed by residents in our community, Dean said. Funds will be disbursed on a first-come, first-served basis, city officials said. Eligibility is based on need. Internet survey ends soon by Ruth Campbell. An internet survey rolling out rapid COVID-19 testing and the school choice application window were discussed by Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray during his weekly media call. The internet survey ends December 17th. We are conducting this survey because we need to gather some data as we better understand the type of internet service that families in ECISD have within their homes. It's critically important right now that all of our children have some level of internet access, especially those kids who are experiencing school in a virtual environment. Currently, 37% of our students are experiencing school this year in a virtual format, so their internet connectivity is critical to the success of their academic success, to their ability to communicate with their teacher, to their ability to complete effectively some of their assignments that they're given, Murray said. Families were surveyed in the spring, but a lot has changed since then, he added, so the district wants to know what types of decisions parents have made in that regard. The district has provided devices to every ECISD student, but that device is only as good as the internet service in their home. We will use those data to inform our work as a school district. Do we need to seek more funding because some of our families, due to their economic status, they're unable to afford the internet? Do we need to expand some of the services that we're currently providing? Do we need to work with our city and county officials to explore some other opportunities? It's all in an effort to inform the work that we're doing, Murray said. The district formed a task force called the Connector Task Force, whose purpose was to study the current landscape of broadband access in Ector County, study solutions that other communities across the country have implemented, and then to make some recommendations to this community as to how we can move forward. These data will inform the work of that community, of that committee, as we make recommendations to our larger community on how we can proceed forward. It's really important that as many of our family members as can take a few minutes, and it's a very short survey, to fill that out. That will give us some really good information and inform the work as we travel to tomorrow, Murray said. Rapid COVID testing began Monday for ECISD staff. If a staff member displays symptoms, they can take the test and get results within 15 minutes. Murray said the test has a 98% accuracy rate. Depending upon the result of that test, we would either quarantine that staff member and start the cleaning process and potentially quarantine others, or that staff member would know that it's not COVID and they may be dealing with some other illness, and we would certainly encourage them to visit their doctor for follow-up, Murray said. After the holiday break, the tests would be made available to students. The test for high school students will be self-administered. For elementary and middle school students, it is administered by one of our nurses. Some middle school students may be able to self-administer the test, but all adults do this test on their own, as well as our high school students, and a nurse is simply there to supervise or monitor, he said. For the youngest children, he said a nurse would perform that test. He noted that students must have parent permission to do this. Local News Roundup. Donuts with Santa. Donuts with Santa has been scheduled for 9 a.m. December 19th at the Ector County Coliseum, Barn G, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be Santa for donuts, shopping, photo opportunities, activities, and more. Santa will be taking photos and greeting guests from 9 a.m. to noon. Masks will be required throughout the entirety of the event. Tickets are available and are very limited. Tickets are at tinyurl.com/y2xjexun. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, today. Locations include the Ector County Courthouse Annex, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and the First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not a location. In Midland, early voting will be at the Midland County Annex Elections Office, 2110 North A. Election Day locations include the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. In Midland, Odessa Country Club, Number 1 Fairway, Midland County Annex Courtroom, 2110 North A, MLK Junior Community Center, 5600 Butternut, and Midland Chin Church, 2800 Louisiana, all in Midland. Voting hours, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Starbright Village. Starbright Village will be open from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. through January 1st at McKinney Park, 625 West Pool Road. There will be more than 300,000 lights and holiday-themed displays. The walking trail will be open. Face masks and social distancing is encouraged. Visit tinyurl.com/y27qzp11. UTPB forms three new research centers by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin is going all in on research with three new centers focused on biomedical research, natural resources, and a cyber center. Scott McKay, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, said the Biomedical Research Center with Zhu Min Zhu and Mei Zhen Kui specialize in research into heart disease, stroke, ALS, and Alzheimer's. The Natural Resource Center provides contracting, consulting, method development services, and collaborative research project opportunities between UTPB, regional industry, and stakeholders. McKay said the NRC includes chemists, biologists, and geologists. And of course, they specialize in geologic and chemical issues, analytical issues, those kinds of things, he said. The third newest center is the UTPB Cyber Center. It will provide the infrastructure for the university to train hundreds of cyber professionals in cybersecurity, privacy, computer science, network administration and security, machine learning, software engineering development, and data science. The center will provide programming at the certificate, associate, bachelor, and master's level to supply the workforce and collaborate with industry to help West Texas thrive and attract technical professionals. Information from UTPB says. McKay said the advantage to having the centers is it provides a critical mass of expertise and resources and helps deliver a message, branding, if you will. Of course, our faculty all do research, but by individual. You can't package that, so each center has a theme and part of not only research and academics, but it also has a theme to help industry and economic development issues, McKay said. By having those three themes, we sort of converge the resources to a critical mass. Then, of course, there's a lot of operational, logistic advantages to having a center. We don't end up doing everything over and over again for resource support, administrative report, that kind of thing. We only have to do it one time. Just like anything else, we have to build stuff. We have to do invoices. That's not stuff I need them doing. We need to build an infrastructure for that, he added. He said a lot of workforce certificates have been added, and some of those are online. A lot of folks like me went to school a long time ago before there was data science. And if I was an IT professional, I may have to come back and get a certificate. We developed several certificates. For instance, we have undergraduate certificates in cybersecurity, and we also have graduate certificates in cybersecurity and data science. We're actually coming out with many more certificates, McKay said. He added that another 6 to 8 certificates are coming up in computer science and information technology for workforce development. Although the Biomedical Research Center won't be as public-facing as the Natural Resource Center or cybersecurity, its research is top-notch, McKay said. It's a way for us to outward face to industry the things we can help them with, especially both of those with what we call applied research, whether we're helping them with a problem or whether we're helping them do applied research, writing grant, whatever it is, he added. They can also help find and fix a problem or help with training. We have graduate and undergraduate students who we can engage in these projects, so it's a win-win. These kids can get real-world experience working on these applied projects, McKay said. Mai Zhen Kui, co-director of the UTPB Biomedical Research Center, is working on causes of cardiovascular disease, and her husband, center director Zhu Menzu, is working on neurodegenerative disease research. Zhu's current research includes studying the pathological roles of presenilins and its associated protein, PSAP, in Alzheimer's disease and ALS. The goal of his research is to determine the normal functions of these genes in neuron development, including differentiation and survival, and the pathological role of these genes in Alzheimer's disease and ALS, using molecular and cellular approaches and animal models, UTPB website said. Kui's research focuses on molecular mechanisms underlying vascular diseases such as atherosclerosis, restenosis, and thrombosis. Specifically, the website said, Kui investigates vascular diseases caused by aberrant signaling mechanisms, including extracellular molecule interaction with cell membrane receptors, signal transduction pathways, gene expression, and protein modification. She integrates molecular, cellular, and genetic approaches to discover the mechanisms that control the progression of atherothrombotic vascular disease. She said the research center has 7 to 8 people now working on medical research. Kui said they have several faculty members collaborating, and they get help from each other and the UT system support. She said they have purchased a lot of equipment already and have hired several people. So far, no one knows we are doing this kind of very good research. So if we let other people know that some people may be interested in donating support, Kui said. She hopes one day to have a PhD program. UTPB senior Samantha Gallegos is majoring in biology with a chemistry minor. She works in Sue's lab. She intends to become a cardiac surgeon and said the research is really helping her. "I love it," Gallegos said. "I think it's amazing." She said she never expected to be able to work in a lab like the one at the Biomedical Research Center at a local university. "I didn't even know that this existed. I wish I had found Dr. Zhu a lot earlier in my undergraduate career. I would have been here since I was a freshman. I took molecular biology and I really loved it. I've always wanted to go to medical school. Everything here is putting that to good use, and it's really making it more well-rounded, I feel like." Obituaries for Friday, December 11th. Harold Gene Sledge. Harold Gene Sledge, 90, of Midland, passed away Sunday, December 6th. He was born March 27th, 1930, to Annie Scott and John Wesley Wes Sledge in Comanche. He married Joyce Ann O'Neill in 1951. He is survived by his wife, Joyce Ann, sons David and wife Sandy, Mike and wife Sarah, all of Midland, daughter-in-law Carol Sledge of Houston, four grandchildren, five great-grandchildren, and two more on the way. He is preceded in death by his parents, Annie Scott and John Wesley West Sledge, siblings Bob, Sally, and Jake, son Stephen Philip Sledge. A funeral service will be held at 1:30 Monday, December 14th at First Baptist Church in Midland, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. A live stream of the service will be available via https://vimeo.com/488616520. Those able to attend the service in person are asked to please wear a mask and practice social distancing. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that contributions in memory of Gene Sledge be made to MARC, 2701 North A, Midland, 79705. Daniel M. Fairchild. Daniel Fairchild, 88, of Comanche, passed away Saturday, December 5th. Arrangements are under the direction of Daniel to Heartland Funeral and Cremations of Comanche. A memorial service and celebration of Daniel's life will be held at a later date. Daniel Myron Fairchild was born January 10th, 1932, in Westbrook, to Milo Myron and Annie Marie Hart Fairchild. He married Deffy Zona Merworth in 1950. He is survived by his wife of 70 years, Deffy Fairchild, a son, Myron Fairchild, five grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his daughter, Dana Lynn Fairchild, a son, Russell Wayne Fairchild, his parents, and a sister, Marianne Phillips. Lucita Madronero Etheridge. Lucita Lucy Etheridge passed away in Odessa Wednesday, November 18th, at the age of 78. She was born June 23rd, 1942, to Marcelo L. Madronero and Fructusa C. Madronero in the Republic of the Philippines. She married John Etheridge in 1970 in the Philippines. Lucy is preceded in death by her parents. She is survived by her husband, John Etheridge, and her two sisters, Glenna Malong and Irene Magadan. Funeral services, including a visitation and mass, are scheduled for Monday, December 14th at St. Mary's in Odessa, with visitation beginning at 1 p.m. and mass at 2 p.m. If you wish to make a donation, please consider St. Jude's Children Hospital or the Odessa Food Bank. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Ernest Rhodes. Graveside services for Ernest Rhodes of Odessa will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, December 11th in the Gaines County Cemetery, with Reverend Kyle Rogers officiating under the direction of Ratliff Funeral Home of Seminole. Ernest passed away December 5th. He is survived by his daughter, Belinda Stedman, and husband, Mike, of Odessa, Ernie Rhodes and wife, Sharon, of Bluffdale, and daughter, Christy Campbell, of Odessa, brothers, Billy Rhodes and wife, Janet, from California, James Rhodes and wife, Maria, of Lubbock, sisters, Lurleen Combs, of Seminole, and Erlene Kimbrough, and husband, of Odessa. He's also survived by 7 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and several nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his wife, Wanda Rhodes, his father, Earl Rhodes, his mother, Cora Rhodes, and his brother, Earl Rhodes. Visitation was held December 10th at the Ratliff Funeral Home in Seminole. Memorials can be made to the American Cancer Society. Ronald Keith Bunch. Ronald Keith Pastor Yoda Bunch, 71, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, December 3rd. He was born December 2nd, 1949, in Portales, New Mexico, to the late William Perry and Stella May Owens Bunch. He married Vicki Diane Meredith in 1979. Surviving him are his wife, Vicki Diane Meredith Bunch, daughters, Krisha Marker and husband, Mike, Rebecca Prather and husband, Edward, and a bonus daughter, Shauna Brandon, and husband, Jason, his son, Mark Bunch, and wife, Mindy, brother, Kenneth Bunch, and wife, Vivian, as well as numerous nieces and nephews, 20 grandchildren, and 14 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, William Perry and Stella May Owens Bunch, his brother, Amos Buddy Bunch, sisters, May Biddy, Lenora Bunch, and Kathleen Smith, and one grandson. Memorial services were held Friday, December 11th at Faith Tabernacle Church. Arrangements under the direction of Acres West Funeral Chapel. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Barbara Bradley Conger. El Paso. Barbara Bradley Conger passed away December 6th in El Paso. A graveside service will be held Saturday, December 12th at 2 p.m. in Pecos at Mount Evergreen Cemetery, officiated by Pastor Ray Carrion. Barbara was born in El Paso to Jack and Darlene Bradley, October 12th, 1943. She is preceded in death by her father, Jack Bradley, and her mother, Darlene Bradley, and a brother, Larry Bradley. She is survived by her sister, Judy Rowe, of Dublin, her sons, Jeff Conger and Jarrett Conger, and wife, Jennifer, of Pecos, 5 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. Memorials may be given to your choice of charities in Barbara's name. Linda Klein Courtney. Willis. Linda Klein Courtney was born August 15th in Gallup, New Mexico in 1941 and passed away December 5th. She is survived by her husband, Gail Courtney, children Gary Courtney, Terry Campbell, and Sidney Landbauer, and husband Kent, 5 grandchildren, a sister, Karen Klein, and a brother, Royce Klein. She is preceded in death by her parents, Otis and Frances Klein, two sisters, Gloria Lilly and Mona McMinn, and a granddaughter. Funeral services will be held at First Baptist New Waverly, Saturday, December 12th at 11 a.m. Death notices. Carolyn Kermickel. Carolyn Kermickel, 76, died Wednesday, December 9th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Crematory of Midland. Maurilio Ruiz Reyes. Maurilio Ruiz, Grandpa Wilo Reyes, 83, of Andrews, died Friday, December 4th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. December 12th at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Andrews. Burial will follow at Andrews North Cemetery with Father Joseph Akbana officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jose David Sushil. Jose David Sushil, 84, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 8th. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, December 15th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Hector County Cemetery. Joey Zuniga. Joey Zuniga, 49, of Odessa, died Friday, December 4th. A chapel service was held Friday, December 11th at Martinez Funeral Home. Burial followed at Hector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Father Joe Iger officiating.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.